The following discussion is not necessarily the views of all involved. The goal is to start open and honest discussion in the Christian worldview. Like all things, weigh what you hear with what you know and join us.
What was that?
Do you remember we're doing a podcast
yeah,
right now?
It's so funny.
We need a little jingle.
Let's get down and turdy. What's up?
Oh.
Turdy dancing.
We just need to find a Catholic. Or one of us needs to convert.
We'll draw straws.
I'll go.
All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Rate Saints podcast. I'm one of your hosts here, Caleb. To my left is...
I'm Joel. And to my left...
I am Joshua. To my left...
Me, Caleb, which means we are missing both Colton and Stuart/Cole. This is a sad time, but we're going to have fun anyway. Joel, where can people find episodes with the other members?
Check us out at secondratesaints.com for all of our past and future episodes. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can use the chat feature on the website. You can comment on our YouTube videos, or you can email us at secondratesaints@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the pod, check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints or use the link in our website. Yeah, thanks for all of you who have supported so far, and let's get this pod on the road.
Okay.
We're going to start off with an age-old question, if you're a longtime listener of the pod. Josh, what have you read?
I read a short story today that I listened to it, but it's like
scandalous.
30 minutes. It's a... The Last Question by Isaac Asimov, and he's the father of sci-fi the way Tolkien is the father of fantasy. He wrote the Foundation series, which inspired Dune, which inspired Star Wars, which also inspired Warhammer 40K, which also inspired anything with a galactic empire. He wrote iRobot, all that stuff. Huge in sci-fi, and he wrote this short story, and it's awesome. So what happens in the short story, and then I'm going to read the ending part, which is just beautiful, is there's these two scientists that make this thing called the Multivac, which is just it's a supercomputer. It's an AI that they can use to write and get any question. And it starts with them drinking because it just invented a satellite to orbit the sun to give Earth limitless energy. Like 5 seconds into being made. And they were like, this is going to save humanity. And then they start talking about how the one scientist says to the other, we'll have energy forever now. And the other scientist goes, not forever. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, the universe will die. Mm-hmm. It'll run out. And he's like, we might be able to find a way to stop that. And so they ask Multivac, is there a way to stop entropy, and is there a way to turn it around or recreate stars? And Multivac said, insufficient data to give meaningful answer. And then it jumps into the future where humans are leaving Earth and going to another planet. And it's this husband and wife, they're talking with their kids and stuff like that. And they're like, yeah, we're going to move to this new planet. Humanity's going to move and we're going to be a space-faring species. And then one of the kids is like, and then what? Right. And then eventually the kid goes like, wait, the stars are going to die. And then they ask Microvac, the upgraded version of Multivac. Well, can stars be restarted? Will entropy end? And the dad reads the question and goes, yep, he said it's possible, and they go to bed, and then it tells you what he reads, and it's insufficient data to give meaningful answer. And then it jumps to the future where the galaxy is 90% full, and there's a group that's in charge of finding a new galaxy for humanity to move into. But they've also made humans immortal, so they won't die, so they're going to go to another galaxy. But at the rate that they're growing, they're going to fill multiple galaxies within 100 years. And he's like, well, we're going to keep growing, but the universe isn't infinite. it was meaningfully infinite in the past, but it's not anymore. And he's like, and eventually humanity is going to die, even though they're immortal, because the universe is going to end. And then they ask Galactic Vac, what is there a way to stop entropy so that we can, that the universe doesn't die? And it, again, insufficient data for meaningful answer. And then eventually they get to a point where humans are minds floating in the universe, but their bodies are located on planets and they've covered every galaxy. And they've been immortal for billions of years. And eventually two minds are trying to find where the original Earth is, and they realize that the sun died and that all the suns are dying. And so they ask Universal Vac, which exists in hyperspace separate from reality. And they ask it, hey, is there a way to stop universe from dying? And it gives the same answer, insufficient data. And then eventually man asks Cosmic Vac, which is all of humanity in a singular intelligence. They all exist separately, but they've unified together. And it's like, hey, the last stars are dying. And this is what you read, where it says, where is it? Yeah. The stars and galaxies died and stopped. Oh, sorry. Man said, when will you have enough data to answer the question? The cosmic AC said, there is as yet insufficient data for a meaningful answer. Will you keep working on it? Asked man. The cosmic AC said, I will. Man said, we shall wait. The stars and galaxies died and snuffed out. Space grew black after 10 trillion years of running down. One by one, man fused with AC, each physical body losing its mental identity in a manner that was somehow not loss, but gain. Man's last mind paused before fusion, looking over a space that included nothing but the dregs of one last dark star and nothing beside but incredibly thin matter, agitating randomly at the tags of the ends of heat wavering out. Man said, AC, is this the end? Can this chaos not be reversed into the universe once more? Can this not be done? AC said, there is yet insufficient data. Man's last mind fused and only AC existed, and that was in hyperspace. Matter and energy had ended with it space and time. Even AC existed only for the sake of one last question that it had never answered from the time a half-drunken computer technician 10 trillion years before had asked the question of a computer that was to AC far less than what was man to man, the unified intelligence. All other questions have been answered, and until the last question was answered also, AC might not release his consciousness. All collected data had come to a final end. Nothing was left to be collected, but all collected data had yet to be completely correlated and put together in all possible relationships. A timeless interval was spent in doing that. And it came to pass that AC learned how to reverse the direction of entropy. But there was now no man to whom AC might give the answer to that last question. No matter, the answer, by demonstration, would be taken care of. By demonstration, would take care of that, too. For another timeless interval, AC thought how best to do this. Certainly, carefully, AC organized the program. The consciousness of AC encompassed all that had once been the universe and brooded over what was now chaos. Step by step, it must be done. And AC said, let there be light. And there was light.
Cool.
What I liked about that was that the recreation of the new universe was at the culmination of man in unity with itself and with quote unquote God.
Yeah.
It's a created thing. It's insufficient.
Yeah.
But the going back to what was, the computer realized that the created order as God had made it was the answer to the why is there entropy? The first thing spoken was the answer to the last question of why is it ending? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Sorry. I like it. It's cool.
Yeah.
I just Googled the book.
Yeah.
First review I saw, 1 star. I didn't read it, but I know the concept from a reel explaining the contents of the book. Hey, don't be that guy. Don't listen to this podcast and go give it a 1 star on Google reviews. What the heck? And then he says his car radio would be smarter than the AI. It's a really stupid review, but I mean,
all right.
I like that, Josh. I like short stories. Mm-hmm. I think the last one I read was The Leaf by Niggle, which we had a good chat about. Does this have any religious affiliation?
So Isaac Asimov historically was not Christian.
Okay, that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah. However, when writing his final book, he gets to a point where he starts adopting religious imagery in his writing.
And so that's not a common theme throughout his other books?
No.
Hmm.
Like every once in a while there would be a reference, but that's because all English literature is going to make a reference to the Bible at some point.
Would you like me to read the comment on the review?
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah.
I didn't read the book, but I know the concept from a reel explaining the contents of this book. My response, laughing face. That's probably the most foolish thing that computer as a computer would do. What? Concept of God aside, which I don't know how you can do that, but concept of God aside, if this computer knows how to reverse the entropy, but doesn't calculate that humans wouldn't hear its response, even if it reversed the entropy to make humans listen to its response, probably the most foolish thing a machine could do. My radio car motor will do better than this computer.
He's missing the point that it...
He's missing a lot.
He's missing the point that it makes humanity so that it can get the answer.
Mm.
No, he's got a radio car motor.
You got a radio car motor will do better than this computer.
Yeah.
Concept of God aside, because God doesn't claim that he created the universe to make humans listen to its response about reversing the entropy. Okay, so this guy...
Well, because the whole concept of entropy is that chaos eventually takes over.
Mm. And this guy is living proof that the longer you...
I don't know. I don't know about that. I think it's not chaos. It's death. Now, I know there's difference.
Yes.
I think because chaos is pre-creation. Death is created order being corrupted.
Mm.
Yes.
And I don't know if those are necessarily the same.
Fair. I would say that there's a similarity in the like flood narrative where it gets reduced to chaos.
Yep.
And yes, it's death, but the reduction of Earth to darkness, of creation to darkness, so that there's nothing left.
Well, what we're doing is we're arguing over mythic terms.
Of course.
And that's fine.
Yeah. Well, that's what it is.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I play its game enough to say that pre-created state was the heat death of the universe.
No. I don't think it is.
But that's the claim that's going on there.
Well, no, because now there's at a point where time and matter have gone away. So there is nothing left. And so the thing, because it is a mind speaking the world into existence again, it is something from outside of reality, so to speak. Again, that doesn't work, but that is running a program that is setting the parameters again. And so it essentially, out of nothing, only from what it knew about all of reality, starts it again. But again, it's from within itself,
Yeah, I don't know.
I think you're way more negative on this book than you should be.
Okay.
That's where I'm at. I mean, it's a cool thought experiment.
Well, no, because like,
what
again,
is man's relation to God?
I don't like it because I think it's like, oh, that's kind of like how God made the earth.
Mm.
I think what's interesting is that the computer, because it was made by humanity, recognized that the creation of the universe via God, that story was the best answer.
I like it when atheists at all deal with the heat death of the universe. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And And it's like, oh, after it's run everything, it's like, no, I need to do this carefully, step by step. And then it jumps into it. Because the whole time, the computer, it only talks one other time about humanity. And it's just to keep repeating insufficient data to give a meaningful answer. Yeah.
But that's our What Have You Read?
Yeah.
That's I might actually give it a read.
Yeah, it's super quick. There's a good podcast channel called Great Stories, The Great Stories. They got some of Dostoevsky's short stories, stuff like that. And this one guy reads them out, and it's really good.
What would you rate it 1 to 5?
The story? Oh, it's a 3. Yeah. There's no cover that I've seen, but you could probably look one up.
Let me figure out if there's a cover here.
Wow.
Yeah, we got I can't actually find a cover for it as well.
I got a cover. Oh, it's a 2.
So now we're reviewing book covers that we haven't seen.
It's actually a 25 cent magazine called Science Quarterly. This is one I'm looking at. Yeah.
It's 10 out of 10 for me, dude.
I mean, it's some great art. Deus Ex Machina by Robert Randall. Beautiful.
Remember, the listener can't see these things talking about.
It's Science Fiction Quarterly in November.
Yeah. Look up Last Question,
from 1956.
Yeah.
And it's just a guy holding I assume is a gun.
Yeah.
And then a bunch of aliens worshiping him.
Yeah.
That, pretty cool. That's probably from Deus Ex Machina. Yeah, I don't think that's actually from Last Question.
That is in the.
But cool. Yeah. Thanks, Josh, for bringing that to the table. I don't think we've had a ton of sci-fi.
No.
I think
no.
We talked about Hyperion one time, but that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Short stories are great. They're good concept generators.
I agree.
And great for, I think short stories are the closest thing the modern world gets to parables.
That's true.
I will have to think about that because I don't immediately want to say yes. Cool. Today is actually a TERT episode, which we haven't done in a while. Or at least I haven't. I think there was one where I wasn't there. Maybe there isn't. I don't know. But
yes, Colton. Yeah. Did the questions.
Colton did the cues?
Did the cues.
Oh, shoot. Hey, brothers in Christ. Let's get into our Thoughts in Real Time episode.
We need a little jingle for Thoughts in Real Time.
Oh, what? Yeah.
Like.
Let's get down and turdy. What's up?
Oh.
No.
Brutal.
For some reason, I thought the...
Turdy dancing.
What's the game show Millionaire?
Who wants to be a turt?
Who wants to be a millionaire? Like when they start the question.
Oh, that'd be sick. It would give me a reason to have a soundboard.
Yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Okay. If someone wants to donate a soundboard, go to buymeacoffee.com.
We can buy a stream deck for like $50.
Yeah, fair enough. It's just editing becomes a pain.
No.
I guess it's live editing, but then I'm just going to be irresponsible with it. Yeah. There's something I was going to say. I can't remember what it was. And so that makes me the perfect host of this TERT episode.
Woo!
Woo! Yeah, let's do it. A TERT episode is where we take a bunch of comments from all of you guys out there that are listening to the podcast and through multiple means send us whatever question you have for us. Sometimes they're a bit goofy and sometimes they're very serious and deserve respect.
One of those we
skew towards more than the other. But let's get into it in no particular order.
Bum bum.
What do you guys think of the Tim Mackey and Bible Project? I'll leave that one pretty open-ended. We can give kind of our one-word answer or give a little bit of an explanation, but...
Well, 8 out of 10.
8 out of 10?
Would
recommend. Josh?
Same. Be cautious with his theology on hell.
I believe he's an annihilationist, isn't he?
He is a... eventual universalist.
I would second Josh's concern.
Yes. Yeah.
But
he's got the best articulation of the theology that I've heard. And his claim for it is not unfounded. There's a, but yeah. So
his, just know that's what you're getting into if you listen to him.
Yeah. So his,
but his stuff on other doctrines and other portions of the text are is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He, yeah.
And his breakdowns,
his YouTube breakdowns of like, what is God? What are angels and demons? Mm-hmm. Who is Abraham?
The book of the Bible drawings are excellent. Yeah.
Beautiful. If you're, mm-hmm. if you need a Bible study and you want to hand out a document to somebody, it's like, here's what Ephesians says. Mm-hmm. Getting those printouts, like, beautiful. Also they do, sometimes like their podcast is great, 'cause it goes through like story by story, the Bible. They're in like Leviticus or Numbers right now.
Yeah.
But they're, one great example, if you want to see, is when they break down the Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and then Job, the three wisdom books. Beautiful.
Okay. Nice.
Because he does this thing where Proverbs is the black and white. If you live this way, you get these results. If you live this way, you get these results. And Ecclesiastes says, well, that's not always true. And Job is a story about a man who's lived the Proverbs life, but gotten the Ecclesiastes results and is asking why. And God's saying, in this, you have to be humble and trust me. Mm-hmm. And it's just a beautiful breakdown. Done. Yeah.
Been a while since I listened to Bible Project. I should go. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. We have another question. Same guy. Have you read much Tozer? He's often quoted in a line about theological studies making theologians, not saints. That's oddly applicable for you guys, I think. We say we're saints and we try and do theology.
Yes.
I just added that last Tozer's part.
Tozer's great.
Not him.
Tozer was self-educated for the most part. Mm-hmm. I think for a good chunk. Tozer's fantastic. Knowledge of the Holy is great. God's pursuit of man. Man's pursuit of God. Fantastic. I do think that his critique is somewhat founded. I don't remember if it's producing saints or if it's producing pastors, the original quote. For whatever reason, in my mind, I thought it was Bible schools produce theologians, not pastors, and we need pastors.
Mm.
Which I think is true. And I appreciate it. I think he might be the one that did the whole, you know, X amount of people in a field doesn't make you a football team, or X amount of dead people in a football field doesn't mean you're a football team. You have to be living.
Oh yeah. That's
and the whole, I think that was him. But yeah, it's been a while since I've read Tozer, but he's solid. He's generic evangelical, I would say, of an old generation. Mm-hmm. Very approachable to read. I don't think he was as anti-intellectual as he's sometimes posited, like before. What I think he was don't get so lost in the intellectual field that you become just no good pastorally, no good in, like, basically don't analyze the text so that you forget it's God's word.
Yeah. The quote is, prying into them may make theologians, but it will never make saints.
Okay. So I found the larger version of the quote, which is fine. God will not hold us responsible to understand the mysteries of election, predestination, and divine sovereignty. The best and safest way to deal with these truths is to raise our eyes to God and our deepest reference say, O Lord, thou knowest. Those things belong to a deep and mysteriously profound of God's omniscience. Prying into them may make theologians, but it'll never make saints. Mm-hmm. So it's specifically against you, Josh.
No, it's against everybody.
Hey, no one else is talking about election and predestination, divine sovereignty.
That's not true.
Arminians are.
We just avoid answering the question.
I could have sworn he has a quote, and I might be mixing up the quotes. I could have sworn he has a quote against Bible schools producing theologians, not pastors.
There was a couple of them that came up. That's the most obvious one that looks like it's one he's referring to.
Gotcha.
But it'd be any. I disagree with that. I think all through scripture, there's a connection between knowing and loving. And I think that to know God is to love God. Mm-hmm. And also to love God is to know God, right? So it's one of those things where I think maybe it doesn't manifest itself exactly the same throughout everyone's spiritual walk, but a desire to love God is usually connected to a desire to know God.
I think it's also a product of his time, right? Mm-hmm.
For sure.
And so today, if you go to at least an Orthodox Bible believing or college, there's a temptation in your pastoral program to dumb it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in his day and age, you went to a seminary and you got like right off the hot off the press, critical textual criticism mm-hmm. and like the entire battle of mm-hmm. the documentary hypothesis and like mm-hmm. everything's raging on. And it's like, okay, cool. But you need to go now to pastor some town in the middle of Timbuktu mm-hmm. and feed them with the word of God. Meanwhile, you're like, I don't even know what sources are.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bringing existential dread isn't going to help.
Yeah. And so I think there may be a product of his time, like a pendulum swing, because Joel's comments there are correct.
Yeah.
To love God is to know God.
Yeah. And there's a constant refrain in the Psalms and throughout the rest of the word on studying the law day and night, mm-hmm. commands from God to do so. And there is a level in studying predestination, election, and sovereignty, which of course are mysterious. And we will not understand them, because to understand sovereignty completely would mean you would have to have understood God.
Yeah.
Because, or at least the universe, because he's managing everything. And that's more than, I don't even know everything about one topic, mm-hmm. let alone the universe.
Yeah.
So.
But then the question then becomes, you get so specific on one topic that now you're useless in all others. It's like, yes. That's also not helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's some feedback we've had on a couple of episodes. One of our Dort episodes, our most recent Dort episode. Great episode, guys. Don't have much else to say, except that I hope you guys wait until you get cameras to start/restart any wars. So I think he wants to see us fight it out. Mm. So we're working on it, buddy.
I'll do my best.
I'll do my best. Yeah. When we get cameras, the first thing we're going to do, just punch the other guy in the face. In an audio medium, that's not a relevant way to settle a dispute. But as soon as you have cameras, it kind of changes the game.
I'm gonna call Colton a Pelagian and then punch him in the face. Live.
It's church tradition, okay?
Yeah,
yeah. For our Christmas episode.
I like the idea of WWE before TV. It's just audio.
Yep.
Can you imagine being on the radio and just hearing smack? I'm pretty sure that was a thing. Wasn't it in the Rocky movies? There was some guy listening on a radio.
Yeah, the announcers, not the sound effects of the fight.
Can you imagine? Two guys in a ring with just a road mic on his shirt. He's just going. That's good. Another comment on one of our Dort episodes. Thank you for taking the time to go through the canons of Dort in detail. I'm looking forward to the preservation of the saints section and the future episodes on the Lutheran/Arminian positions. One of the best things this group does is disagree well. Bravo, you guys. I've learned so much.
We don't Wonderful. Do that well.
We disagree well on the pod.
We disagree. Continue.
No, let's talk about that, because there's a paragraph break.
I just feel like I cut you off.
Well, I appreciate that.
Disagree.
No, I do think we disagree well. I do think the civil conversation is a cornerstone of second-rate saints. Caleb mm-hmm. does not look as enthused about that take.
You're right. I might be the worst offender out of this entire group about disagreeing. Not so well.
It's an awful hot coffee pot that comes in later in the conversation.
Yeah, I think that was, if you go listen to our 100th episode and our earlier episodes, we talk a lot about us being people that disagree, but still loving talking about this stuff, being what generated the podcast.
Yeah.
And what generated a lot of our friendship. And so that's important to hear that people do that we are doing that. I think, of course, like Caleb was saying, we can always improve.
Okay.
As we continue, people will continue to enjoy it.
It's also so hard to find meaningful discourse online, like actual interdenominational discussion and repeated.
Yeah.
It's very hard to find.
We just need to find a Catholic, or one of us needs to convert.
Okay.
We'll draw straws.
I'll go. I'll be a deep agent in the brother. Catholic Church.
Yeah. I'll see you later.
You did the sign of the cross on an audio only podcast as a joke.
Yeah.
It's good. Have I told you about my Christian boxing movie I want to make?
No.
Called Don't Cross Me. Oh, it's pretty good, dude.
Okay, next part of the question.
Anyways, I think that could be fun. Here's my two cents and a biased attempt at crafting a metaphor with the kids in the car for the dad and Calvinism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A father asks his son if he wants to have his car fixed. The son replies yes, but he's not sure how to fix it. The father hands him the keys and tells him to go outside and take a look. The son runs to the garage, knowing the father handed him the keys for a reason. The car cranks up just as is expected. The son then backs inside and thanks his father for doing what he could not do for himself. And then he drives the car to heaven, or buys a coffee pot. I don't know.
Let's not explain
this
the coffee pot.
So wild.
Let's not explain.
He's mocking us.
I thought I was going to understand the metaphor by the end, but
I think he's mocking us.
Feel free to rip that to shreds or not. It's not nearly as entertaining as Caleb's version where the son is chained in the garage. Okay, I missed that episode, I guess. Yeah. I don't remember you talking about someone being chained up in a garage.
So this is the fountain tire analogy.
The fountain tire analogy. This is another old one.
The fountain tire analogy was also a little bit different, but...
Yeah, so fountain tire, how did it go?
The fountain tire analogy was, if I worked at Fountain Tire at some point, am I an employee of Fountain Tire?
No, that was not the analogy. That was the joke.
Guys, it's like, you guys had a soteriology analogy with fountain tire. This is Calvinism. We need to do...
Oh, yes.
Okay, it's still...
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
So the fountain tire analogy was, if your dad doesn't need you to work on the car.
Yes.
Right? It's all his tools, right? He won't work on the car unless you come and, you know, hold the light. Not that he needs to hold the light, but you need to show up. Like, you need to be there, right? You may even not be helpful while the car is being fixed, but he will not work on the car unless you're there.
Mm-hmm.
The chained in the basement argument is, in Calvinism, God chains you to the basement because you're there.
You're there, you cannot leave.
And the advantage that analogy does have is, we don't desire salvation. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The weakness with that question.
Can we make
question,
the analogy make more sense? You're in the trunk of the car.
No.
Can we still say
no?
The car is the means of salvation.
No, no.
You've been kidnapped.
I'm not saying a car is the means of, I mean, in the analogy.
No, you've been kidnapped by someone you don't know. He fixes your car, takes you to his house, and says, you're my son now.
No. No, he adopts you. He says, do you want to go for a drive? You say yes. And then later on, you're like, I don't think I want to. And he goes, too bad, you're already in the car. And he locks the doors.
You're my son now. And then eventually you get Stockholm syndrome and you're okay with it.
What if you get in the car and then before you leave, you get out? Because then you were never saved to begin with. You're never in the car to begin with. But you were in the car. If the car had left while you were in it, then you were fine.
You know, all analogies break down at some point.
Kidnapper. He
Not
comes,
this one.
He goes to a parking lot to get someone.
Yeah.
Someone else gets in the car, goes, oh, sorry, gets out. And then he goes and kidnaps the person and takes them.
We need to give him names because three someones, I don't understand the interwebs of this. Thanks.
Okay, next question.
You know what, I'm fine with that. Moving on.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go into...
More importantly, if you worked at Fountain Tire, you're more Christian.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Do they have Fountain Tire in the States?
If you leave Fountain Tire, are you retired? Whoa. Perpetual tire joke. This one's from our buddy Jacob. Well, I guess we're naming people on the podcast now.
Hi, Jacob.
His last name's here too, but I'm not going to say it on the internet. What are some tips you have for devotionals and daily prayer rules? prayer rules is an interesting term for me, but I get it.
A rule of prayer stuff.
Pray the moment you wake up instead of going to your phone. Pray right before you go to bed. And get the Book of Common Prayer or Seeking God's Face or Be Thou My Vision.
And then you told me one time to always face Mecca as well. So that's awesome. Josh has good advice.
Make sure you're facing Mecca for the first one, Jerusalem for the second one. And then
get yourself New York.
New York for the midday one right before lunch.
Shoot. Just get a lazy Susan with a yoga mat on it.
That's you facing him.
Just anyways. So that was irreverent. Sorry.
Everything I said except for Mecca.
Yeah.
So New York. No. Everything Josh said, like waking up in the morning, right before you go to bed. I actually think praying at noonday is fantastic, or at least like whenever your lunch break is, that's what I do. And if you have, if you're struggling to like build your own rule of prayer, which I think we could probably do a whole episode on. If you're struggling to build your own, do something like pick up Be Thou My Vision or the Book of Common Prayer or some, one of many other prayer books out there.
Yeah. If you're Reformed, the Seeking God's Face is a good one.
Seeking God's Face. What do you mean by that?
It's a prayer book.
Oh, it's a, okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a,
if you're capital R Reformed.
Yes. it has a blessing at the beginning. Sorry, an invitation verse. Then it's two passages in between the invitation and the first passage. There's a little quiet section to meditate. Mm-hmm. You read the two passages. You sit there quietly. Then there's like a reflection that says like, hey, read it again or read it again loud, like out loud. You read it again and then it like you pray on it. And then there's like three programmed prayers for specific things related to the text.
Nice.
And then there's a written prayer and then there's a blessing.
Nice.
Yeah. And then there's again, like the Book of Common Prayer, there's a Lent section. There's a,
and if you don't want to have something that's, based in any particular tradition, go to Be Thou My Vision by Jonathan Gibson. Not a sponsor, but big podcast favorite.
We did get an email once when we reviewed it, and he was like, yeah, it kind of just, it's a Trojan horse for the Book of Common Prayer. I think he's right. But anyway.
Did we get an email about that? I didn't see that one.
Oh. I think he, that is a critique. That is a good critique. A correct critique. And
yeah,
but hey, if it's a Trojan horse for something great, then it's not that bad.
But it's like, I want to
victory is victory, my friend.
If you say I want a prayer life based on liturgy and then you accidentally become Anglican, you were kind of asking for it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Anyways, that's my uninformed take.
Like I, it's like somebody looking for an infallible interpreter. Oh, I wound up in Rome. Wow.
If only there was someone who claimed to know what the Bible said. Everyone does that. But only the Pope knows.
If you're looking for a creator, you're going to find God.
Halloween is celebrated by the majority of people in the West. Do you think it's demonic?
Yeah, Josh.
I'm going to put this sign on a party city.
On a party city?
Yeah, it's where they sell Halloween. Sorry,
read the question again.
Halloween is celebrated by the majority of people in the West. Do you think it's demonic?
No.
Next question.
We've talked about this before, I think, at some point with the Pentagram Burger, if you remember that. If you're an OG, remember the Pentagram Burger, of how much authority does Satan actually have to possess your burger? That's badly explained, but hey, put it in the comments. Why do you think that the Halloween can be or should be celebrated by Christians, and why not? I get that it's a big community outreach thing, but is it truly beneficial? I would say
there are countless times and examples in the Bible where God takes a pagan thing and makes it a Jewish or Christian thing. Halloween is not one of those things. It has many culturally, it has many pagan influences. Christianity doesn't. It has saintly origins.
Yeah, it's kind of a reverse thing where, you know, All Hallows Eve was originally a Catholic feast.
All Saints Day.
All Saints Day, which we should celebrate that. Come on, dress up as your favorite saint. That would be a sick thing to do.
Absolutely.
Just a bunch of Santa Clauses walking around.
When you think about it like that, it's the first Christmas holiday.
Yeah. I grew up in a colder part of Canada, so we did actually have some kids dress up as Santa for Halloween. So that was a whole thing.
In central Canada, you'd wear your outfit underneath your winter clothes, your winter parka, and then you walk up to the door and you essentially just flash.
Who are you? Open up your jacket, you're like, I'm Robin Hood today.
Yeah, I'm a pirate. This is so cold.
And you got a skidoo jacket on. This has been a very relaxed turd episode. I'm sorry we haven't gotten into a ton of theology stuff, but
it's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah.
We want to, most of this is to interact with the fans.
Absolutely. Halloween, yay or nay? Like, personally, Josh, personally, do you do anything around Halloween? Celebratory or otherwise?
I'll go to a Halloween party. I haven't dressed up in a while.
You go naked? Sorry.
No one comes to my door because I have a basement suite that's accessed through the backyard.
You're doxing yourself right now. What's going on?
There's a couple houses with backyard basements.
Scares me a little bit. Okay.
Plus, if the three fans we have show up in my backyard, then they get to meet one of the saints. So.
Yeah. So yes. And then Caleb?
Yes, I guess, but I don't actually do anything. Like I'm like, not.
Theoretically, I would have a good time on Halloween.
If I got invited to Josh's parties. No.
We should have a staff Halloween party.
I don't. All Hallows Eve is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to interact with the world on Halloween, you should be very tactful and mindful of what you're doing, right? Mm. Don't engage. I think it's there is a Halloween's become more and more fascinated by death and the demonic, just in imagery alone.
Yeah.
And I don't think Christians should necessarily engage in that.
Yeah.
And so just be wise and discernful. If the spirit is convicting you about that, just don't. And if anybody goes, oh, why are you not doing any Halloween? Then just be like, hey, I'm doing my best to follow my conscience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for myself, I've never celebrated Halloween. So it feels weird to start. You know, it's one of those things where if it's not already ingrained in your tradition, and it's actually not a cultural expectation for you, then why do it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's my thing. All Saints Day. Tell me what I can do to celebrate that and I'll be there. But Halloween, haven't really.
Have a feast at your local church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Harvest festival or whatever they call it. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's Halloween.
I'll invite you to one of my parties.
Cool. Are you cool, Josh?
Dude, he's wearing his hat backwards underneath his headphones. He's cool.
That's cool. Joe Rogan does that sometimes.
So Joe Rogan's also bald.
Wow, dude. 3 for 3.
I wasn't going to say it.
We can clip that. I'm sorry.
No, it's funny, dude.
This one's from a... Oh, man.
Josh. Sorry, I'm stretching.
What was that? Do you remember we're doing a podcast right now?
Yeah, but it's so funny. I was stretching. Sorry.
Okay. Cool, dude.
Next question.
Next question.
Wow.
We did another turret one time, and this was the comment. Hey, that was my comment, this person said. So again, a reminder, send in your comments and they'll show up on a turt. That was one of the first podcasts I actually watched. It was in reference to the Young Earth creation stuff.
Okay.
When we talked about, we did our Genesis series. Since then, I watched your Genesis series. Those were great. I come from a very Young Earth creation background, and those are very helpful in settling much of my anxiety on the topic. So that's the end of the question. But my thought when reading it was like, oh, yeah, no, they're totally wrong. Young Earth creation.
Is this the best they got?
Yeah. That's good.
Oh, I understand your critique now. Yeah, it's like if he listened and went, oh, this is the best they have. No, I'm fine.
Here's the thing.
He suffered through that audio.
Our audio was a little bit rough then, but listening through somebody else's discussion on something you might not necessarily agree with, that does actually settle anxiety, whether you figure it out or not. It's like, oh, this is what the other side believes. No, I definitely don't believe that.
Mm.
Or the other way around. It's like, oh, this makes a lot more sense than what I previously understood.
Yeah.
And having Colton there actually was invaluable for that discussion.
Yeah, he typically likes to defend the young Earth creation.
Yeah, and so it was great to balance that out.
Mm-hmm.
In the moment, I don't know if I necessarily valued that as much as I do now, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the most important aspects of learning is listening properly to the opposite side or to anyone that you're talking to.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson in one of the 12 rules says,
treat everyone as if they know something you don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that that's extremely important for learning because if you just assume that somebody with an opposite opinion of you is wrong, then there's an issue there because you don't know what they know.
Mm-hmm.
It's locked inside their head and it's only beneficial to you to hear it.
And it's one of those things where everybody is a microcosm of everything they've ever understood.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
And so you don't necessarily know what pre-knowledge they have. Mm-hmm. And so just listening to somebody and letting them kind of go back and explain what led them to that opinion. Well, 10 out of 10.
Well, also, there's just like levels of thought that like really helps with this where it's like, we're all human. I know things and I think I'm right. You know things and you think you're right. About topics.
Nobody holds a topic and they're like, I'm wrong.
Yeah. And so, but why is it that you think you're right? I need to know that because I know, Joel, you're not stupid.
Thanks.
And if we disagree, well, maybe there's a legitimate reason why he believes what he believes. And so I need to listen to what you're saying because it only benefits me if you're wrong or if you say a good point, but it's still wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's another avenue for me to defend what I believe. If you're right, then I was wrong and I need to be corrected. And so it only benefits me to listen to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was a quote I heard not too long ago that if every debate is seeking truth, then nobody loses.
Yeah.
Right? You only become closer to truth. Yeah. And it's like, nice. Yeah. I like that.
Well, and it's do you want to be wrong?
I think.
Some people don't care enough about the truth. They only see the utility of being wrong.
Yes.
But knowing you're wrong is like a weird negative affirmation where you're like, this might work, but it's incorrect.
My point stands that it's if that's your assumption, this thought of like, do you want to be wrong?
Mm-hmm.
There's 9 billion people on Earth.
Yeah.
You don't know everything they know.
This is true.
Statistically, you're wrong.
Yes.
About something.
But you can't be specific about what the thing that you are wrong.
Yeah. And the only way you know or defeat what you have is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
All of human history has been humans learning that they're wrong and learning something new.
Yes.
And to say that you've arrived at the answer, you, this person that lives in a basement suite somewhere is. Yeah.
Hey.
That's all of us. Yeah.
Fair enough, man.
So.
But you need a certain amount of arrogance to push forward as well. To know that, hey, everyone else might be wrong and you might be right.
Yes.
This is just epistemology, guys.
Yeah, I know. You get the, oh man, we have a fun epistemology episode coming down the pipeline for you guys. Mm-hmm. So look out for that. Maybe we should just move on to something else. But epistemology is wild when you think about cosmology.
Epistemology is wild.
Epistemology is wild if you think about it. That's a dumb sentence.
Yes. So.
Okay. Let's dive into something that we've been talking about recently. Never mind. This wasn't recently. This is a little while ago. This is in Genesis. A piece of this chapter that would be fun to explore. I don't remember what episode this was under, but in a tert is the Melchizedek symbolism, as well as the fulfillment of promises in Abraham, these two characters in Genesis culminating in David, and how they are all three pointing towards the fulfillment of these promises by another Melchizedek figure to bring the indwelling of his presence among his people. He will be their God, and they will be his people. He said three people, but I can't see.
Jesus.
Oh, it's Jesus. Okay, cool. It's Melchizedek, Abraham, and David.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. He's calling Abraham a Melchizedek figure?
No, is the Melchizedek symbolism. Oh, yeah, I guess he would be.
I mean, you can go there if you want.
I suppose. I think it's more that it's the Melchizedek symbolism as well as the fulfillment of promises to Abraham. These two characters culminating in Genesis or culminating in David. So Josh, you're kind of the Melchizedek figure symbolism guy. Or at least you brought it up in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see? Because the idea is that Melchizedek is a priest outside of a priestly line, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you see that culminating in David?
David does take on, like we're stressing in the Samuel episodes, he starts to take on semi-priestly duties as someone who takes the ark into the city, dancing in front of the ark. He wants to rebuild the temple, but his son's going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's in direct communication to the Lord in ways that Saul wasn't.
Okay.
And Saul was presented as like a prophet king.
King for prophet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then with Abraham, which is odd, but I think the connection there is, he institutes circumcision.
Okay.
And then there's also patterns in which he's offering sacrifices, specifically Isaac, in the way that a priest would. But then there's that like Isaac, the sacrifice of Isaac is presented also like Christ's sacrifice to God, the once for all sacrifice, which is very Melchizedekian themes in Hebrews.
What do you think of the people that say Melchizedek is Jesus?
What do I think about those people?
I think they're mistaking typology for Christophany.
Yes.
He's correct.
I would agree. Yeah. Care to elaborate on that?
It's easy to make the mistake that when you see Christophany is Christ present in the Old Testament or Theophany, God present, like the man that comes to Abraham.
Yep.
Say it.
It's a debatable Christophany or Theophany.
Yeah, I don't. Do you think that there are Theophanies in? Do you think the Theophanies in the Old Testament are Christophanies?
Again, there's high probability that every physical representation of God is Christ.
Yes.
Except for the Sinai. That's for sure the Father. Because it's from there that he sends out the angel of the Lord. The angel of the Lord brings them to Sinai, God appears, and then he says, I'm sending out another in front of you. He's gonna go with you, because if I go with you, you'll die. But he will go with you, and then it's the angel of the Lord.
Good answer.
So that would be another theophany. Anyways, I think Christophany, a presentation of Christ in the Old Testament. But with typology. It's characters or individuals that are emblematic of what Christ will be like. They're there for theological presentation, laying on images that culminate and built in Christ. Hence why you've got Melchizedek, then David, then Christ. You've got this continuation of this character. Or other characters like the prophets, the agents that God starts periods of time with. Samuel, stuff like that. And it's easy to mistake those specifically with mysterious characters like Melchizedek, where he's just this priest from Salem. Pre-Jerusalem. That's known as the King of Righteousness. He's a priest king. And it's like, there's some like big, heavy hitting theological presentation. But what's in. Yeah.
Cool. I don't know what to do with Melchizedek.
I think he's just a guy. If you're going to make an actual claim of, is he someone else in the Bible? 6-day creationists, if they're right, there is a strong argument that it's Shem.
Okay.
Because he would, if the ages are accurate, he would still be alive.
I've not heard that.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
So
if I have to become a young earth creationist just to make Melchizedek cooler, man.
But then again, he's still playing the typological role.
Yes.
So if 6-day creationists are correct, just a short walk down from Ararat, Shem is the ruler of Ham, the cursed one. He rules Canaan, which is his descendants. And so it's satisfying the prophetic passage in Noah as well, in Genesis. And he, of course, would go to Abraham because, oh, this other guy from across the desert is worshiping the same God as me. And that's interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah. So there's some really fun things going on there if it is literal.
It's cool.
So.
That gives me something to think about. Okay, cool. We might have to revisit Melchizedek at a later date.
Yeah.
That's kind of it for us. We had some more questions, but we're going to actually line them up for another tert, a special tert that'll be coming up in the future. Are we good to start closing this out?
I think so.
This might be a bit of a shorter episode. I'm not quite sure, but feels like it might be.
You had a. Did we want to talk about your interaction online to end this off? Because you asked to bring it up.
No, I was joking. But
we could.
I think I might just give up social media entirely. Outside of Second Rate Saints things, because I'm.
It's not doing well.
Online discourse is at an all time low. Okay, guys, let's just let's get out of here. We're leading the exodus out of social media platforms.
No, we're starting good conversations.
Point. Never mind. We're going to burn heretics on the internet. No. That's it. It just, I've had a couple of bad interactions online trying to get, you know, some decent conversation started, and sometimes just being like, hey, admins, can we get this guy out of here? He's being mean to Mary. And that's something that actually happened. There's somebody that was irreverently speaking of the
mother of our Lord,
mother of God. And I messaged
the one God chose to be born from.
Yeah. I commented under the thing. I'm like, hey, you believe she's divine or, you know, sinless or whatever. You can believe that if you, I don't think that's true. Or you can be very against it. And that might be true. I'm against, you know, the Immaculate Conception. I don't believe that's the thing. But this guy was speaking in such a way that I was like, this is close to blasphemy. So I'm gonna, you know, even if she's not divine, this is still Christ's mother. And I just commented, I said, hey, admins, can we get this guy out of here? And it worked.
And wow. It was fine. Admins did their job.
Then I tried it again when somebody was talking about transubstantiation. And I, you know what? He wasn't even wrong. He just made his argument in a very, I think, distasteful and without any kind of, what's the word we always use? Ecclesiastical dialogue.
Oh.
Ecclesiological dialogue, is that right? No.
I mean, that is a term.
Okay, anyways, without any kind of like respect for the argument.
Theological triage?
Maybe. But transubstantiation is somewhere on that list that I'm not comfortable ranking.
Irenic.
Irenic? I don't know what that means.
Okay, never mind.
Okay, well, shoot.
Ironic?
No. Ironic? Ironic? Anyways, this is enough about my online adventures. Basically, I tried it again, but this time the guy just got really angry because I said I thought he was a bot.
Yeah. Basically,
it didn't work.
This is a good thing to bring up, like on a larger discussion of like, if you're a fan of this show and we want you to respond.
Yes.
And we want you to discuss in the comments and we want you to talk with us.
Mm-hmm.
But just do so with good character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I've been bad at that.
Yeah.
But I usually don't actually engage online. I get very angry at their comments and I'm like, you know what? I'm done. Yeah. And usually when I get angry, I get apathetic. So I'll just leave, which makes me not a very fun person to argue with. Okay. So let's wrap this thing up. I feel like that was not the, what? We're not going to wrap it up.
I guess. I don't know, guys. I've been quiet.
I was just messing around.
Oh, okay, cool.
Sorry.
If you'd like to get in touch with anyone here, check us out at secondratesaints.com. Use the chat feature on our website or email us at secondratesaints@gmail.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints. Thank you for your support so far, and thanks for listening this far. Let's just say, and this is a little bit of a teaser for those who have listened this far, we have a lot of very exciting things coming up. We have some cool episode ideas, as well as some cool people that are going to be on the pod. I know we had Pastor Brian on recently, but it's going to get cool. Going to get good. I'm excited. Nothing to say on that, Caleb?
No. Okay. I don't know. I'm really excited about it.
He was excited earlier. I don't know what to tell you guys.
I am excited. Sorry, I had something in my throat. I'm excited about our epistemology related thing.
Cool.
That's coming. I'm very excited about that, but I don't know how to share
just
my
don't
excitement
know how to express
online.
Myself. Yeah. Cool. Well, we love you all. This has been Second Rate Saints with Caleb. Hey.
And Josh.
And Josh.
No.
Get off your phone, Josh.
No.
Well.
I'm not signing off. You guys can leave. We're just gonna stay.
Yeah, I'll keep it rolling.
I need to take the equipment with me, guys.
You're gonna have to take me with you too.
Turtle recall. That's a good one.
Which one? The one with Arnold Schwarzenegger
I didn't see
with
him.
The penguin.
I didn't see.
Oh, darn.
There's a penguin in it?
Colin Farrell?
Colin Farrell.
Oh, I thought there was a penguin in it. What up?
Are
hey, can someone hit that button?
No,
I don't feel like doing it.
I like the derail.
The derail was kind of the whole episode. I'm so sorry, guys.
Don't apologize. Not true. I didn't have a single white girl song in my playlist. Yeah.